Some of you may recognize David from his keynote address at this year's Elevate Social Impact Conference put on by the Civic Innovation Office. At the age of 5 years old, David developed glaucoma. And by the age of 20, he lost all his vision. However, this did not prevent him from pursuing a challenging and successful career and experience life to its fullest potential. Over the years, he has hiked and canoed the woodland of Northern Ontario and the wild Rockies of the Canadian West. He was one of the first blind individuals to graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science from a Canadian university. His career in IT started in Air Canada as a systems application designer. And he helped develop the first back office PC-based accounting system for travel agencies. His career has had stops at some of the major banks and continued in a leadership role at IBM, where he founded the IBM People with Disabilities Diversity Business Resource Group. Please put your hands together as we welcome David Best to finish our afternoon. Thank you very much, David. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you today, and I really would like to express my appreciation for Michael and his encouragement and support in allowing me and giving me the opportunity to come and partake with you. I hope that when I leave today that I will have allowed you to develop a greater understanding of the business need for flexibility and community engagement. I hope that you'll gain a greater appreciation for the business need of standards in the design of products and services, and I certainly hope I motivate you to embrace change. The business value of accessibility is one of our challenges, and I would like you to think about the digital divide. What does the digital divide mean to you, and what does it mean when we say we want to close the digital divide? That starts with our leadership. And there's three aspects that I would like to raise with the leadership. Leading with purpose. Quite often we lead with purpose, which means doing things right or doing right things. Either way, you impact lives. So management tends to do things right. They want to improve performance, maximize profit, reduce expenses. Whereas leadership tends to want to do right things. They want to set priorities, allocate resources, and of course, fulfill the organization vision. And quite often, the two will clash. So the accessibility gap between leadership understanding of accessibility and the management implementation of accessibility is the invisible barrier preventing blind people from actively participating in society. Life experiences from education to employment to leisure require access to information that allows people to make decisions in building confidence and independence. The second thing about leaders is to lead with passion. I encourage you to be passionate about what you're doing and lead with passion, not the duty to accommodate. Steve Jobs said that he's not passionate about computers, but rather he's passionate about building tools that help people to unleash their potential. He believed that the intersection of technology innovation and the liberal arts was the key to closing the digital divide. And third, leaders need to inspire. To lead with purpose and passion, leaders must understand their role. And Ronald Reagan once said, the greatest leader is not necessarily the ones that do the greatest things, but they are the ones that get other people inspired to do the greatest things. What is the digital divide? What is driving that digital divide? Basically, there's two global trends that are seamlessly integrating people and machines. There are the human evolution, and there's the technology innovation. The human evolution is being driven by the demands for human rights. People are connecting these days together through great social networks and are closing the gap between cultural differences and levels of education. And we have seen an evolution of intelligence over the past several decades. Back in the 60s, we measured people's IQ by their intelligence. And if anybody can remember back that far, they're put in the dumb class or the smart class. And so as the 70s moved in, the women's movement introduced the emotional intelligent quotient. And that started the idea of building relationships within business. And then in the 1980s, we had the expansion of air travel and telecommunications, which introduced us with the social intelligence, getting people to learn more about different cultures. And then in the 1990s, we had the political intelligence decade, where governments around the world started implementing accessibility and disability legislation. And in the first decade of this year, companies started to implement employee diversity groups, giving us the cultural intelligence. And of course, this decade, with the merging of man and machines, we have what I refer to as the digital intelligence. So on the other hand, we have the technology innovation, where we have shifted from in the early 1900s from standalone devices and large machines to today we have the internet of interconnected devices, miniaturization and wireless. We shifted from the text-based to the graphical user interface. We've shifted from the office to remote work locations. And most of all, we have shifted from manual processes to automation, which has had a huge impact on the lives of visually impaired people. So the push-pull effect on the digital divide has created unintentional barriers with corporate ambitions and service providers focused on delivery on one side of the divide and marginalized citizens and policymakers on the other side. Social inclusion is not just about enabling technologies and accessible services, but it must be more about effective design around real life experiences. So how do we do that? So we want to bridge the divide. So bridging the divide is based really on design. Design is all around us, but for the most part, it reflects the perception of the designer. And if the product or service fails your need, then the design concepts are flawed. So, for example, if you had come into this room and you had found all of the chairs designed for preschool children, you would be very uncomfortable. But the design of those chairs would not necessarily be the flaw in that case. The same with buildings. If you put stairs going into the buildings, that may not be a design flaw to you, but there are people that would find it to be a serious design flaw. For me, a city with a transit system that does not include digital signage in their systems is a serious design flaw for me. So design is the bridge that overcomes barriers between the delivery of information and decision making. And some barriers that we need to think about when we're talking about design is in productivity, inclusion, and communications. Productivity that enables employees to be productive and satisfied, inclusion that integrates people, products and services, and communications that informs people, builds knowledge, and creates confidence. The ability to use new and emerging technologies today is currently at the heart of social exclusion. And to try and help and build a more inclusive society, governments around the world are implementing accessibility standards based on four core principles: dignity, independence, integration, and equality. So bridging the divide, we talk about design removing those barriers. So what are the design barriers? The digital communications divide that is marginalizing visually impaired people from the economic prosperity is an inflexible systemic paradigm today that needs new ideals with adaptive leadership. The seamless merging of people and machines is revolutionizing the innovation design strategies. And some of the most recent milestones that we can look to is the things like Facebook automatic alternative text processing for images, the Apple iOS facial recognition, the Google Neural Machine text translation for translating languages on web pages, and the Microsoft Scene AI mobile app that allows me to see objects and people around me when traveling. So going forward, design is going to be focused more on three main features: transparent interfaces, interface design that will focus on developing systems that can adapt to user behavior instead of adapting user behavior to the system. Secondly, ubiquitous access, always being connected. The cloud architecture will be tailored to the particular needs of different internet consumers. And the third feature design will be based on is adaptive levels of engagement. Future contextual capabilities will interact with new adaptive levels of engagement through vision, hearing, and tactile senses. So what we need to do is think about breaking down those design barriers. How do we remove the design flaws that affect some of us? Through integrating real-life experiences into the design process, you can remove design flaws and close the digital divide. This means that design strategies must consider the three main design pillars: performance, security, and accessibility. Quite often, accessibility is not considered to be a design pillar. Quite often, when I talk to IT managers and I say accessibility, they automatically think about disability. And that's not the case in the modern design. Accessibility is about access. So you have performance, a stable, consistent, and fast access. You need a design integrated security model, a safe, risk-free, and high-quality delivery access, and accessibility, which is a fully inclusive, easy to use, and productive access. So fully integrating those design processes will help build an inclusive model. But how do you determine how good you're doing with that? So you need to develop success indicators, and there's two groups that you can develop success indicators around: productivity and satisfaction. Productivity in terms of measuring performance and quality using the WCAG standards, and satisfaction, efficiency and effectiveness of employee and consumers through the standards of AODA. So integrating real life experiences is a key. And how do we do that? Well, most organizations develop a design model, and quite often, more recent days, I've heard a lot of talk about universal design, where you take some technology and you adapt it for multiple use. The other design is human-centered design, where you take a human limitation and adapt a solution for it, such as the telephone. And there's many other design models. One is user experience design, which I find most people misunderstand. The user experience design largely is dependent on big data analytics and surveys. And finally, we can think about things like inclusive or responsive design, but those are more philosophies than actual design models. So whichever design model your organization adopts, you have to make sure that you incorporate the seven basic principles. One being equitable use, two being flexible in use, 3, simple and intuitive use. 4 is perceivable information and understandable. 5, tolerance for user error. 6, low physical effort. And 7 is size and space for approach and ease of use. So we've talked about the what's driving the digital divide, what has the divide keeping it open is the design flaws. Once you develop a design model that will implement real life experiences, you then achieve inclusion. Integrating real life experiences into the design process will create greater inclusion, measured by, of course, productivity and satisfaction. So in recent years, there's been a really big paradigm shift affecting the development of legislation and policies. And we've gone from segregation to integration. We've gone from institutionalization to mainstreaming. And we have shifted from the medical model of disability viewed as a condition to be treated to the social model of disability focusing on the removal of barriers. So the accessibility gaps are the design flaws that prevent people from making informed decisions and from actively participating in society. Digital accessibility is not just about greater use of technology by persons with disabilities, but rather it's really more about transforming information-based processes and the information communications ecosystem. Failure for governments to get this right really means marginalized citizens, not just unsatisfied customers. So I'd like to quickly touch on the four dimensions of the digital divide and see if, if it would be good at some point if you wanted to enter into a dialogue, we could talk about the four dimensions. So the first dimension of the digital divide is dignity, a sense of pride in oneself and self-confidence. The digital divide that you got to consider is going from information to knowledge, and knowledge is power. So the barriers that we have to think about is the message delivery and bias attitudes. And these are things like access, understanding, and building knowledge. So designing for dignity, designing a function... I'll never get my turkey dinner with information coming like that. So designing for a functional building requires features that allow people to perceive their environment and to make decisions. So for example, coming into this room, if it was totally dark, and though for those who are photonic dependent, you would have no visual cues, so you'd be totally disoriented. However, if you were given a flashlight, you could probe the flashlight around the room and slowly build a visual and virtual model of that room in your mind. Likewise, rooms must and buildings must be designed with audible and tactile features for non-sighted people to be able to probe the environment and gain information about that environment. Likewise, people probe the internet, communication services to find and access information. So the level of pride in achieving this goal will depend upon your model of design. The dignity challenge is to bridge the accessibility gap from accessibility to usability through multiple means of representation, expression, and engagement to achieve the greatest possible end user experience. The second dimension of the digital divide is independence. Free from the influence of others, free from the control of others, and operating self-governance. The digital divide to consider is accessibility to usability, and usability is enabling. So the barriers that you need to think about are design standards and government regulations. And this involves perceptions, myths, and experiences. Designing for independence, assuming you have access to the information and understand the options, can you actually independently act upon your decision? Or are you dependent on someone else to assist you? A sighted person coming to a street crossing will look at a stoplight, while a blind person may listen for the traffic movement, search for an audible signal button, or ask for assistance. But in both cases, each individual has the power to actually walk across the street on their own. Likewise, internet communication services, software tools, workplace processes must be designed for independent use. What activities prevent you from taking independent actions due to design flaws? The third dimension in the digital divide is integration. So this would refer to a simulation within social and economic realms. The digital divide is going from passive to active, and active is inclusive. So the barriers to think about is inclusive dialogues and active participation. And this usually refers to innovation processes, availability and affordability of innovation technology. Designing for integration, assuming you have access to the information and are able to independently act upon your decisions of that information, are you an active participant or are you a passive observer? Government open and transparent processes encourage citizens to participate in online forums and consultation sessions. But for the most part, marginalized groups are not included in the mainstream dialogue part of those sessions. Service organizations often function as a facilitator for disabled people to accommodate the government and business communication processes as the voice of their constituents. Innovative emerging technologies must be made available and affordable to support the digital communication needs for people with vision loss. Is accommodating the same as integrating? We have a lot of technologies today that we simply are not using. A good example is indoor beacon navigation, which is about 10 years old, and we're still waiting for government buildings to implement indoor navigation beacons, and we still call that emerging technologies. The question is, when does emerging technologies become mature enough to use? The final and fourth dimension is equality. This is social justice and equal opportunities, achieving wealth, prestige, and power. The digital divide is going from chaos to stability. Stability is satisfaction. So the barriers that you need to think about are collaborative processes and top-down innovation. And this involves attitudes, policies, and behaviors. So designing for the equality is involving the real-life experiences. The struggle for competitive advantage has forced many organizations to respond to the rapid changes in technology innovation and human rights demands. This has had a huge impact on the health of Canadian workers, but mostly it has had a big result on systemic barriers in the job market for blind persons. Bridging the divide between leadership understanding of accessibility and management implementation of accessibility is often the battleground of employment policies and real-life experiences. Does inclusion accommodation programs equalize the workplace? Should accessibility barriers be the causality for job dismissal? So in conclusion, universal design refers to broad spectrum ideas meant to produce buildings, products, and services that are inherently accessible and usable to older people, people without disabilities, and people with disabilities. We need to integrate smart city principles into the design model using engagement, collaboration, and experimentation. Bridging real-life barriers requires your design model to include multiple means of representation, multiple means of expression, and multiple means of engagement in order to be fully inclusive. So, what design model and processes is your organization using to avoid the pitfalls of insufficient research, ineffective designs, and insufficient end-user feedback? I'd like to thank you for the opportunity, and I encourage you to please reach out to Inclusive for any future workshops and dialogues with talking about expanding your design models to include the four dimensions of closing the digital divide. And if we have time for questions, I would take questions. But before we do that, Michael?
Yes?
I want to just induct Michael into the Inclusive Society of Canada. I appreciate the opportunity coming, Michael, and I really was quite inspired with the accessibility work that Toronto is doing. And I have an Inclusive pin so you can prove that you are a member of the Inclusive group. I have to admit it's a dumb pin. It doesn't do anything. But our next generation pin will be smart enough, and you'll be able to say, "Hey, Inclusive, beam me to work."
Thank you, David.